is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And it's so much fun. I get to talk to Tuolumne Master Gardener Julie Silva. Hello, Julie.
Hi, Debbie.
This is a great opportunity. And Julie, we just find the articles that you write for the Union Democrat and my mother load just so much fun to read. They really are. They're really great. So this article that I wanted to reference or talk to you about is the title, and I love the title. It's called Seeds Magically Delicious. That is just it makes me want to learn more with that title, Magically Delicious. Tell me about that. Why did you choose that title?
Well, when you look at seeds, honestly, they are magical. You can think about, who is it? Jack and the Beanstalk getting the bean seeds. They're magical. They truly are, because they're so small. So many things can happen to them, but yet they still germinate and reproduce plants. I think of the seeds that are in my yard. I have a lot of Japanese maples, and I think of the seeds in my yard that come up and become little Japanese maples that should probably have never gotten out of the ground, but yet there they are. And I am amazed at the fortitude of seeds.
Yeah, you know what? One of the things you mentioned, and I think I have a tendency to forget about it. And I'm wondering if anybody else has a tendency to forget about it, but that when you're looking at seeds, sometimes they're so tiny and sometimes they're bigger, but essentially they look like I guess the only way to put it is they look like they're dead. Like, you know, really that they shouldn't ever, you know, that's just the way they're going to be. But, you know, you talk about that they're really, even though they're dormant, and that's what they are, but they're really alive.
They are alive. You know, they're composed of 20% moisture and 80% growing tissue. So they are just, they're in a waiting or a holding pattern. They're just waiting for the right time, whether it be the moisture, the temperature, that something in nature has told them it's time to get going. Uh-huh. So they're just waiting to wake up.
Okay. So when you say that they're waiting to wake up, what can cause them to wake up? I know sometimes I play a tune in the morning to get myself going, but what wakes them up?
You know, that tune thing, that sounds good. Your seeds arrive depending on how you got your seeds. If you're like me and you end up with, oh my gosh, seed catalogs that are piled high by my chair, because once they find out you like seeds, the seed companies want you to enjoy their seeds. So you order your seeds and they arrive. And by ordering new seeds, first of all, you know that they've been cared for properly and they are new. So they're alive. They're ready to go. They haven't been stored in a situation where they've been too hot or too cold. So what starts them is you can open your package and then you've got your soil, however you decide to do it. I was thinking about this a couple of days ago when we had talked about doing this. Planting seeds is like spaghetti sauce. Like spaghetti sauce, because my spaghetti sauce and your spaghetti sauce and 14 other people's spaghetti sauce is just a little different. So everybody does their seeds a little different. But what I do is I use regular potting soil, and I take my seeds and put them in the potting soil as the seed packet requires, because that's your recipe for success, if you want to say that. Every seed is different, every variety is different and has different requirements. So you want to make sure that the seed starting mix is not too wet, and that the seeds are warm enough.
You're providing an environment for these seeds where they're going to want to wake up.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And the environment is not the environment of outside, because you need to start early. Because it takes those seeds, depending on what it is, it will take those seeds a while to get up to be ready to go outside. So it's good to know your last frost date for your area, and then look on your seed packet, and it will tell you how long it's going to take for that seed to get up into a plant form and to be ready to be moved out of doors. So you want to work backwards from your last frost date and then start your seeds whatever amount of time backwards from that date.
And I think quite a few people don't realize that's what you have to do, is actually working backwards from that date.
Yeah.
So, like, say, for instance, Julie, where you're living, have you started any seeds yet?
Today's my day.
Today's your day?
Today's my day. This week, it's been on the top of my list every day this week, and it's Friday. So today's my day. I cannot wait any longer. And I have kind of a unique thing. I have lights in my garage.
Okay.
So, because depending on the seed, again, they do need light. There's some seeds that, again, back to that packet, because it'll tell you, some seeds that need to be covered with soil, some need to be just sitting on top of the soil. And it will tell you how long it's going to take for you to see the seed to start to pop up, to be there. Some things like jalapenos, it can take them 10 to 21 days. Holy cow, guys, by the 21st day, I better be seeing you. Let's see some jalapenos.
Wow. Wow. You mean just for the seed to break open out of its seed coat and to form the first initial leaves?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
That's why it's really important in my book to get good quality seeds, because 22 days down the road, if your seed hasn't popped up, let's say you got some seeds from your neighbor who's had them in the garage for 2 years. If that seed has not popped up, then you've wasted 22 days.
Right. And so, in some instances, you're never going to be able to recoup that time.
That's
so
right.
So maybe you missed the season.
That's right. Well, or you have to go to the garden store, which is all good. You know, the nursery's all good and fine. But if you're trying to do it yourself, you want it to be in a reasonable amount of time.
Right. So what are you going to plant today?
Oh my gosh. You know, and again, back to those seed catalogs next to my chair. I always plant early girl tomatoes. That's a standard at my house, always early girl. And then I do things that are different, tomatoes that are different. So this year I found a tomato that is supposed to have longevity for storage. So I want to try that.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I'm actually doing 5 different tomatoes this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, at my house, everything's in raised beds, and my garden is in the same place because I have chickens and dogs and things that will destroy my garden. So it's fenced in the same place. But this year I'm building some new beds and going to be expanding my tomatoes. So I've got tomatoes, I've got jalapenos, I have cucumbers, squash. I like those UFO squash. I think they call them patty pans. UFOs.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, me too. Let's see. Carrots, but the carrots are really more in the fall. You know, they're cool weather. Mm-hmm. Doing some herbs.
Are you starting herbs from seeds?
I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try. You know, it's one of those things. We have now with the internet and book. I mean, we have so much information. We have a ton of information on how to make things work.
Right.
But
I know it's great.
Yeah, right. But I grow onions every year. And I grow them the same way that my grandfather taught me decades ago. And I always have success. And we always have onions. So sometimes what you've learned from someone else, or what you've learned from just experiencing what you're trying to do, is a good teacher.
Right, right. So, absolutely. I mean, experience with gardening is so valuable. Somebody that's got a great depth as far as the experience behind them, it just makes it really wonderful. I should go back to when you're starting your seeds, and you were saying that you start them in your garage.
Yes.
But do you add any additional heat underneath?
I don't.
Okay.
And I'll explain to you why. I have light banks that have fluorescent lights, 4-foot fluorescent lights over the top, and a metal pan underneath it. It's about probably a 5-foot wide by, I don't know, 36 inches deep and 3 layers. And in the garage with the fluorescent lights, and I let the fluorescent lights go down closer to the seed, the containers, it creates enough warmth. You know, with the garage door shut and my water heater's in there, so it all adds heat.
Right.
And then what I do is as those seeds pop up, I move those fluorescent lights up. And there's 2 different fluorescent lights. There's a regular grow light and then a regular fluorescent light. They produce an amazing amount of heat just on their own.
Okay.
So, and then as those fluorescent lights go up, then I also have a little fan, because you need to have the air move. It stops stops them from getting fungus diseases like damping off.
Uh-huh.
So as those little plants start growing up, I turn the fan on, and it what it does is it makes the plant stronger because they have to stand up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it keeps problems away, like fungus.
Mm-hmm. Good idea. Did you ever use the top of your refrigerator for starting seeds? I know I've heard some people use that space.
I have heard that too. I'm short, so in order for me to take care of anything on top of my refrigerator, I'm going to have to pull out a step stool. So it's just easier for me to do the things in the garage. But you can, because let's face it, the top of your refrigerator is warm. Usually there's lights from your kitchen. Your kitchen lights are usually good, and it's going to be warm in there. So yes, that would be a good place to start seeds.
Right. Right. And do you have any favorite seed catalogs that you like to use?
Oh my gosh. I have to say that I am my own worst enemy, because I want to keep those seed catalogs coming every year, because you never know what's going to be in there. You can find miner's lettuce, doggone it. So what I do is I don't order from just one. I order from almost everyone that sends me a catalog. So I use Baker's.
Okay.
Where are they here? I'm not stuffy about my seeds. I will buy them any place that looks good. So I use Burpees, Baker's, Territorial, Burpees.
I can see, for anybody that can't see that, you know, of course it's a radio show,
right,
but I'm watching you pull out the catalog. So I know you have them.
I do. And sadly, I have them in print. I don't go to the internet and look there. Heck no, I want to hold it in my hand. So,
I know. I love doing that too. There's something about holding it in your hand and flipping through the pages.
Yeah.
And and actually doing it with maybe a cup of coffee out in the garden.
There you go. And I know you can see this, but nobody else can. But on each one, I've got notes. I want this one to give me this. This one, I want these. So it gives you something to do in the winter when it's cold and you're a frustrated gardener and you want to be outside. You can shop the seeds.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, Julie? I hate to say it, but we did run out of time. Can you
Debbie,
believe
how
it?
How does that keep happening?
Time marches on, I guess. But I want to thank you so much. This is so much fun to chat with you and to talk about seeds. And so thank you, Julie.
Oh, well, you're so welcome, Debbie. And everybody get your hands dirty, plant some seeds.
Yes, that's what we would like everybody to do.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, I'm Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne. And Linda Reevely, our Tuolumne Master Gardener, is here at the UCCE office with me. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie. How are you today?
Great.
Good.
And we are doing you're the one doing it, a book review on another fabulous book. What is it?
Well, this is a book that I'm real fond of. It's called Attractive Native Pollinators, Protecting North America's Bees and Butterflies. This is the Xerces Society Guide to Native Pollinators, and it's a very comprehensive book with beautiful photographs and a lot of information. As they say about food, it be nutrient rich. This book is intellectually nutrient rich.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
It's a beautiful book, and it's 370 pages of information about bees and butterflies and other native pollinators, and what can be done to save them and what can be done to encourage them to play a better part in our environment.
You know what, Linda, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. Do we really need to be concerned about this?
Oh yeah.
I mean, should we just be a little concerned, or, is this something
no.
really to...
We need to back up here. We need to be majorly concerned.
Okay.
The absolute health of our planet depends on maintaining these ecological structures, that the one of the biggest players in the whole structure are pollinating insects. Every plant that produces seed needs to be pollinated in some way. Plants like grapes are actually self-pollinated before the grape even emerges. Wheat is pollinated by the wind, as is corn. But most other plants require a pollination experience, essentially, where pollen from one flower is taken to the next flower, fertilizes that flower. The flower can at that point grow seed. Seed ends up on the ground somewhere, sprouts, becomes new plants. It's the absolute cycle of that side of plant life.
And
ferns don't do that. A few other plants don't do that. But the vast majority of food things we eat have to be pollinated. Fully about 75% of the plants we eat for food require pollination.
But a lot of times, I think it's kind of difficult to understand the importance of it, because the philosophy that bugs are bad, and if you have a bug in your house, you should kill it.
Yes, or a bug outside, you should kill it.
Right.
The only good bug is a dead bug. The real problem with that is that we don't really understand the enormous complexity of the lives of insects.
That's true.
And how they operate in nature.
That's true.
And your house, whether some of us a little more than others, is certainly a part of nature.
That's true.
And those insects, you know, there are insects that live in your house innocuously, and there's insects that cause damage to your house. We're taught that insects, we're all taught as children, like flies, are dangerous vectors of disease. I'm old enough to remember the polio epidemic, and flies were a primary vector of polio.
Oh.
And so I grew up being absolutely terrified that a fly might land on anything I was ever going to eat.
Which interesting.
Is something to consider.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that that fly doesn't play an important part in the cycle of life.
Okay.
And that it doesn't have its own place to be and its own, you know, reason for being.
Right.
These things are all incredibly intertwined. And I didn't really become interested in insects myself until I decided to keep bees.
And
bees are one of a few kinds of highly social insects that people have been involved with for many, many years, since probably, pre-Stone Age.
Wow.
People were probably collecting honey from beehives. And certainly other animals do it as mm-hmm. well. And so bees are kind of a gateway insect for an interest in insects, a lifelong interest in insects. But pollinators are a much wider group of insects and other animals.
Okay.
And this book is really an interesting book. The first chapter, which you just covered nicely, is Why Care About Pollinators?
Oh.
And because they're important. It's right. an important part of what keeps us all alive. It talks about how pollination works and who these pollinators are. There's bees, there's native bees. You know, there's over 1,600 different kinds of native bees in California alone.
Oh, I had no idea. Absolutely none. That's interesting.
Know. Wasps, flies, butterflies, and moths, beetles, all of them are important pollinators. Even ants are important pollinators for some plants.
Oh my goodness.
And so we really need to think about that when we spray poison around our house.
Right.
Or go to the store to buy something to kill aphids and end up with the most powerful kind of insecticides available today, which are the neonicotinoids, and go home and decide to spray that all over everything.
Oh goodness.
You can knock off entire communities of insects with one foolish action.
And it's so easy to do.
It's terribly easy to do. They're tiny little creatures, and they're very susceptible to some things. Now, other threats, habitat loss.
Okay.
We systematically have destroyed habitat for insects. In the Sierra alone, where we find cattle or sheep grazing, if they overgraze a certain area, it tramples the bumblebee habitat so badly that the bumblebees completely disappear from the area.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
I know, it's an amazing thing we don't think of. there are other things that are probably hard on them. Of course, the widespread spraying of insecticides. And obviously, if Zika virus is bearing down on you and your family, you want us to spray for mosquitoes.
Right.
But we really need to take care and to know that that needs to be an occasional occurrence, not a daily kind of application of insecticides.
Right. Not a way of life.
Not a way of life.
Okay.
Because you destroy far, far more than just mosquitoes when you
right.
spray. Now, this book also has a real interesting section on taking action. Things that you yourself can do. How to get interested in, say you play golf.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole section in here on helping to create new habitats, bee-friendly parks, and golf course management that you could introduce your golf your golf course landscape folks to
sure.
to help them do a better job.
Uh-huh.
If you are interested in school campuses or making an eco roof or highway and railroad right-of-ways, this book gives you some handy information about how to get involved in helping to restore habitat for native pollinators in those areas.
That is fabulous.
Pretty
that
good,
really
huh?
is. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's pretty good. After that, we also have a whole section on the bees of North America. It is a truly encyclopedic, I hope I said that right. I grew up with teachers from Texas, and whenever I say that word, I sound like I'm from Texas. It really helps us to understand what the varieties are, how they work, what their place in our environment is, and how you yourself can encourage and take care of some of these insect species that aren't honeybees, which requires a fair amount of equipment and
mm-hmm.
some training
mm-hmm.
and expertise. But, for instance, mason bees will live in those funny little bee houses with the bamboo rods.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Those are perfect. If you just leave a few spaces of natural dirt in your garden, particularly, strangely enough, mouse holes,
uh-huh.
bumblebees will move in and live there.
Really?
And bumblebees are just amazing. They're beautiful and charming.
So if you've got just leave some bare dirt.
Some bare dirt you don't walk over all the time and disturb.
Okay, and that's it.
That's it. It's all it requires. Because they dig these little tunnels and they lay their eggs in the tunnels.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, they're amazing. The book also has how to create a pollinator-friendly landscape with some sample gardens.
Oh,
kind
love
of like,
that.
Kind of like recipes for your garden.
Right.
And some recommended pollinator and butterfly host plants. Don't forget the butterflies. We all love them.
Oh, we do.
And yet the populations of butterflies have plummeted.
Mm, that's true.
You know, there are places in Europe where there are practically no insects.
That is astounding.
I know.
That's astounding. I can't imagine it.
Fortunately, we live in a place where the insect population is still fairly healthy. But there are places, even in the United States, where you can open your windows, have no screens, and never see a bug in your house.
That's amazing.
Because they've all been killed.
Oh my gosh, now that we know the advantage to having the insect population, that is really a scary thought.
It's a shock. And
it
is.
It's
a really scary thought. There's whole sections of Germany that are completely free of insects now.
Oh my gosh. So how do they pollinate?
They bring bees in.
Oh, so then you're dependent upon a beekeeper actually
shipping
the bees to the area.
Having to get in there and move
right.
the bees around. And
you can't rely on the natural system taking care of itself.
And we all of us who live here in California are aware of the almonds.
Yes.
And the bringing of the
yes.
bees to the almonds.
Yes, we
Do
sure
you
are.
Know that those bees represent the largest insect migration in the world?
To pollinate almonds?
And they come on the backs of semi-trucks.
Isn't that incredible? That's
yep.
incredible.
More insects come to pollinate those almonds than move around by themselves anywhere in the world.
Oh my God.
That includes locusts.
That is staggering. That is a staggering statistic.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It is.
Absolutely stunning.
Oh my gosh.
So this also has ideas for educators and parents, a great glossary, and a big list of information and resources that could be helpful if you're interested in this. Again, this book is called Attracting Native Pollinators, Protecting North America's Bees and Butterflies, and it's published by the Xerces, Xerces Society.
Sounds like a wonderful book, Linda.
It's a good one.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.